Let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because okay. The backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5.
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the
2007
NFL
go
season.
Stack Guts Combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Come on, let's go.
Yeah, I was at the game.
Yes, Bill, we know that you were at the game. We're glad that you were at the game, actually. Because if you were at the game, then obviously the team would, you know, have a game plan to follow. It would have, you know, things to do. And it would obviously have a purpose to squish in the fish, running up the score, something. We welcome you inside the playbook today for a Tuesday after the Patriots dispatched, dismantled, dismayed the rest of the NFL by thrashing Miami 49-28 on Sunday. Obviously, on Tuesdays, we do a lot of, in the past, we've done a lot of nitpicking, and certainly I think we'll do our share of that today. But I mentioned to... Paul and Andy and Tom just a couple of moments ago, if you haven't had a chance, I'm going to read you just a couple of excerpts from it, because I'll take it for granted that maybe some of you don't have the time to surf around and read all the things that are written about the team during the course of a week or during the day, and you're probably at your desk, you're probably getting some work done, or at least many of you are. I realize that some of you probably have boss buttons built into your internet. Maybe this is just idle chit-chat. We're glad that you take the time. Trust me, I never take that for granted. Always glad that you take the time to listen in. But I have to admit, I've never let a writer or a columnist, someone who opines for a living, I've never let anybody ever get under my skin. I've never let anybody bother me what they say or even really what they broadcast, because I know how the game is played. I mean, if you're in a talk show, it's your job to create opinion. Or it's your job to, you know, basically formulate opinion and then just kind of let it bounce where it may. Either people will agree with you or they'll disagree with you, and that's how talk radio works. If you're a columnist, your job is to write your opinion and then get people to react to it. And whether they like you or not, generally speaking, they will read you. That's what columnists do. Opinions. And so let's take this in the light in which it's, you know, in which it is given. This is an opinion by a columnist who writes for Page 2 on ESPN.com. His name is Greg Easterbrook.
Screw him!
some of you certainly feel that way, I'm sure. We've already had a few emails about this particular column today, which we saved for now, and we'll get to those in a moment. But I'm going to read you a few excerpts here because, frankly, today this got under my skin a little bit, and I think it's because there is a certain amount of, shall I say, vitriol that is involved here that I really think is unnecessary, and I think it's highly unprofessional. And how this guy keeps a job is, frankly, beyond me. Maybe it's because ESPN has so many freaking guys on their column list that you know, they can't keep track of everybody. But honestly, you know, this guy's getting away with slander. He's getting away with slander, and he's doing it under the guise of being a columnist and giving his opinion. He clearly has it out for the Patriots. Now, there may be those of you who listen in, and I know we have Colts listeners on a regular basis here, and this is not anything against Indianapolis. We're going to have all of next week to talk about the Colts matchup. Not going to really jump into that this week. I'm glad you're here, too, because the Colts are a very good team, and the way that they whacked Jacksonville last night caught my attention, and that's going to be a titanic battle, and I do think the Patriots will have their hands full in 2 weeks. But in New England, they've got Washington to play, and when you have a team that has nothing to lose, you know what? They can be dangerous. And you're saying, oh, yeah, sure, right, you said the same thing about Miami last week. Well, it's true, but Miami does not have any talent, and what little talent they have is woefully unmotivated, with the exception of Jason Taylor's dance into the end zone after Matt Castle's interception, which I thought was a joke. I mean, Jason Taylor is a better professional than that.
Joey Porter's worse.
You know what? I would tend to agree with you. I would have thought that Joey Porter was worse. But what Jason Taylor did, dancing and strutting into the end zone like that, I mean, come on. You're down still by 21 points. What is the reason behind your celebration? That may have been more unprofessional than anything the Patriots have been accused of. I know the Patriots have been accused of running up the score, and that's why Bill got testy post-game-wise after the game on Sunday. I understand that. But see,
yeah, I was at the game.
You got to understand here, you can't have it both ways. All right? First of all, people complain that, you know, the Patriots are a marginal team or a marginal championship team or a marginal dynasty because each of the three Super Bowl wins was by 3 points. All right, they complain that, you know, the Patriots are just barely beating people and that this whole Spygate thing indicates to some, not everyone, but to some, that they believe that the Patriots' sleight of hand and their bending or breaking of the rules somehow taints what they did over the course of their three Super Bowl championships. When the Patriots were simply just basically, you know, just winning the game and that was it and then moving on to the next week. Now they're upset, rightfully so, that people are calling into question their integrity. And people are calling into question the legitimacy of their three championships. So now they're beating the crap out of people. They're putting pedal to metal. They're flooring it because they're upset and they want to make sure that they leave no doubt here that they are the best team. And now people are calling them sore winners and unsportsmanlike because of the fact that they're beating the crap out of people. Which is it, people? Which is it? Fair or unfair, right or wrong, if you're not a fan of the Patriots and you're listening to this program, which one is it? Which is the apt description? You know, you got to understand, when you're up at the top, you're king of the hill, everybody's going to take pot shots at you, and it's your job as the champion to stay up there. This is why, when you are up at the top, this is why it's tough to stay there. And, of course, the Colts are eating this up because the Colts are the defending champs. The Colts are the Patriots in 2003, all right? That's the Colts. The Colts are the New England Patriots in 2003 because the Patriots are actually in 2004 because the Colts are the defending champs, and yet they're not getting the respect that perhaps they feel they should. So they're putting a big boulder on their shoulder. So we've been through what the Colts are going through right now. Now it's come full circle. Now the Patriots are the bad guy. They're the bad guys. They're the cheaters. They're the sore winners. They're the guys who are beating up on people who are defenseless around the league. All right? Now I'm going to read you just a few. You can read the whole article for yourself at another time. It's a long article. I mean, this guy, I don't know how he writes so much in such amount of time. But, I mean, this is really a waste of time and space and breath and everything. But I got to read you some of this because, frankly, I find it incredible. Talking about how the Patriots and the Colts on November the 4th. This is Greg Easterbrook from ESPN2 or ESPN.com, page 2. He says, Patriots and Colts on November 4th shaping up to be one of the most attractive and exciting NFL regular season games ever staged. Pairing is fabulous. The teams are the league's best. There's a chance both will take the field undefeated. Plus, Patriots at Colts has a powerful, compelling narrative, namely good versus evil. The fact that I don't even need to tell you which team represents good and which stands for evil says a lot about how low New England has sunk. You knew instantly which was which, didn't you? Argument for the Colts says paladins who carry the banner of that which is beneficent, or beneficent, I should say. Sportsmanship, honesty, modesty, devotion to community, embrace of a traditional small-town life, belief in a higher power, even love of laughter. The Colts are the defending champion, so they obviously play well on the field. Yet after winning the Super Bowl, they have remained humble and appealing. Does any of this sound familiar, Patriots fans? Easterbrook continues. Through prior years of postseason frustration, they never complained or pointed the finger outside their team. Their players are active in community affairs and don't carp about being assigned to a non-glamorous farm belt city with an antiquated stadium. Their coach, Tony Dungy, smiles in public, answers honestly whatever he is asked. He never yells at players or grimaces at bad plays, and when defeated, doesn't act as though it's the end of the world. Although religious, Dungy said on the night he won the Super Bowl that God doesn't care about football games, which shows perspective. The team's star, Peyton Manning, stands for love of family, constantly appearing in public with his brothers, father, and mother. Manning is happily married and a major donor to a children's hospital. Manning spends a lot of time at children's camps and events. He constantly makes fun of himself. Ladies and gentlemen, representing good, the Indianapolis Colts. Argument for the New England Patriots as scoundrels in the service of that which is baleful,
dishonesty, cheating, arrogance, hubris, endless complaining, even in success. The Patriots have 3 Super Bowl rings, but that jewelry is tarnished by their cheating scandal. They run up the score to humiliate opponents, more on that later, thus mocking sportsmanship. Their coach snaps and snarls in public, seeming to feel contempt for the American public that has brought him wealth and celebrity. Victory seems to give Bill Belichick no joy, and defeat throws him into fury. Belichick and the rest of the top of the Patriots organization continue to refuse to answer questions about what was in the cheating tapes. And generally, you refuse to answer questions if you have something to hide. The team has 3 Super Bowl triumphs, yet its players regularly whine about not being revered enough. The team's star, Tom Brady, is a smirking sybarite who dates actresses and supermodels, but whose public charity appearances are infrequent. That constant smirk on Brady's face reminds one of Dick Cheney. People who smirk are fairly broadcasting the message, quote, I'm hiding something. The Patriots seem especially creepy at this point because we still don't know whether they have told the full truth about the cheating scandal or even whether they really have stopped cheating. They say they have, but the word is not exactly gold at this juncture. Ladies and gentlemen, representing evil, the New England Patriots.
Screw him!
Wow. I saw that, and I'm like, honestly, I mean, you know, I consider myself a fan, but the hair on the back of my neck stood up reading that. Wow, is all I can say. Just a couple of other quick excerpts for you. Greg Easterbrook says, in the good versus evil narrative of the Colts and Pats, running up the score is a telling factor. It reveals a team's sportsmanship or lack of same, and whether a team shows sportsmanship in public might offer insights into its character in private. New England is scoring so many points, the Patriots' offense looks like cherries and oranges spinning on a slot machine. The Flying Elvi stand plus 159 in net points, by far the best scoring margin in the NFL. This is supposed to be impressive, but I think it's creepy. And New England's creepy on-field behavior is only underscoring the seediness of the Belichick scandal. He says later, yes, you can find games the Colts have won by a big margin in recent years, and yes, Manning was on the field through the fourth quarter at Jacksonville last night, but in that quarter, the Colts mainly ran to grind the clock. If they had wanted to win by more, they likely could have. As for New England's running up the score, supposedly the Patriots are angry about the Belichick scandal and are scoring points like crazy to express their anger against the world. Wait a moment. What right do the Patriots have to be angry? Oh, I don't know, Greg. Maybe when people call them cheaters like you, when they've explained themselves several times over. They, after all, are the ones who admitted to systematic cheating. Other people didn't impose that situation on them. They cheated of their own free accord, imposing the tainting of their accomplishments on themselves. The Patriots were not wronged. They wronged others. Yet they're mad about being caught. And yet they seem to want to take out their bad feelings about themselves by embarrassing second echelon teams. That bespeaks of character. That's dark side. That's evil. Woo-wee. That's not even the tip of the iceberg here, kids. Oh, I don't know. Any chance we can get him on the air?
Screw him.
I'd really like to ask why he has such a vendetta against the Patriots. What did the Patriots do to him? Did one of the players in the locker room stuff him in a trash can at one point in time? Or you know, call him a name? Or did Bill Belichick refuse to give him an interview? Wow. I mean, this is opinion, so I think he's pretty much safe, but this is borderline irresponsible. In my humble opinion, it's you know, if he wanted to, you know, create controversy, I guess that's what he's done. And I frankly think that's all that ESPN.com cares about, that he creates controversy, that people will read him. Whether you love him or you hate him, you're reading him. And it's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff here. There's a couple of other things here. He said, let me read just one more paragraph. He says, if the Patriots are unfairly maligned, why the whole screw you act they are staging? If the Patriots were unfairly maligned, they'd be trying hard to convince us their hearts are pure, and that distinctly is not what they're doing. Sure, many New England players are awesome performers. Both of Moss's touchdown catches Sunday came when he was double-teamed. The flying Elvi offensive line was flawless again. Mike Vrabel, waived by Pittsburgh, might be the best linebacker in the NFL. But if the Patriots are so awesome they don't need to cheat, then why were they cheating in Week 1? The whole situation remains creepy. Should New England continue on and win the Super Bowl without a major attitude shift toward nice guy behavior? And should the year end without the NFL's ever explaining what New England evidence it destroyed or why, there could be a huge amount of cynicism about this NFL season. Cynicism doesn't sell a sports product, nor is it what the NFL should be marketing to the young. That's why the Pats at Colts game November 4 so clearly represents good versus evil. The Colts stand for everything the NFL and sports enthusiasts should be proud of. The Colts stand for a positive future for the NFL. The Patriots stand for, well, wouldn't it be nice if the Patriots would explain to us what they stand for? When good meets evil, I know who I'll be rooting for. There you go. All right, kids. I'd like your thoughts. Webradio@patriots.com. Send me an email. I mean, obviously, there's plenty there to attack, and there's plenty there to talk about, even if you think some of it is correct, some of it's right. I mean, it's hard to argue that, you know, the fact that this whole, you know, Spygate thing has been sort of shoved under the rug, it has been. I'd love for the NFL to come out and say definitively either, yes, there's something to this, or no, there's nothing to it. It might very well be that they're trying to let the games take precedence here, and maybe this is something they'll address. My guess is if what the Patriots was doing directly affected the outcome of any games, they'd have nipped it in the bud right now before any more games take place. That's my guess. If that's not the case, then the NFL is wrong. Then the NFL is not doing this the way that they should be doing it. Maybe there's more to this story. I don't know. Clearly, Greg Easterbrook thinks there's more. I'm still trying to figure out in the past why this guy, this guy used to write for, who did he used to write for, NFL.com? I believe it was NFL.com, and then I think Fox Sports for a while, and then now he's been hired by ESPN.com to do the same Tuesday morning quarterback column that is 14 freaking pages long here. So, obviously he's covered the NFL for a while, but he's had it out for the Patriots, I think, ever since the Patriots were a Super Bowl team. You know, he poo-pooed and lambasted the Patriots as being, you know, if I'm not mistaken here, primarily a fraud when they were winning Super Bowls, and now that they're crushing people, they're evil? Wow, I don't really get that. We get it that you don't like New England, Greg. We get it. We understand that. But he calls Tom Brady a smirking sybarite who dates actresses and supermodels, but whose public charity appearances are infrequent. By the way, I had to go look up, and Gary, we had to look up sybarite. It's a person who's devoted to luxury and pleasure. That's what it means. Devoted to luxury and pleasure. Who wouldn't want to be that, to be honest with you? I don't know that we'd be devoted to it. Well, he says Tom Brady's a smirking sybarite who dates actresses and supermodels, but whose public charity appearances are infrequent. Well, I think that's unfair. I also think that's inaccurate. And it borders on slander. And that's a shame. That's an absolute shame. Now, obviously, I don't think the Patriots should spend any time thinking one way or the other about, you know, whoever Greg Easterbrook is. And maybe Tom Brady's agent sends a little note to Mr. Easterbrook to remind him that, if you're under the guise of journalism here, then you're also under the guise of, slander and, you know, libel and things like that. And that, you know, if you're going to single out my client, then maybe you should be singled out yourself. A little warning wouldn't hurt. My guess is that, you know, that agent and Tom Brady themselves have more money and more ability to tie him up in court than he cares to get into. That would be my guess. And all you'd have to do is, you know, for evidence against the guy in a court, and again, I'm no lawyer, nor do I play one here on the radio, but I think you could go back in history to look at the articles he's written about the Patriots to get, you know, the general gist of it, that he's got an in for New England. I don't think this is just a random article that comes from a guy who plays it straight down the middle. This guy's got an in for New England. I don't think he wants to go there. Anyway, I'd like your thoughts. Webradio at patriots.com. The telephone number, 508-543-7482. Again, area code 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. What do you think of the column? Is there accuracy to it? Is it nothing but drivel? Several of you have written about Greg Easterbrook in the past, although it's been sort of infrequent. There are a couple of emails today that we'll get to already dealing with this particular column on ESPN.com, page 2. I have to admit, I'm floored by the out-and-out vociferousness, vitriol, however many other adjectives I can throw out there, by it, because you rarely see this in print or online. You just rarely see it. Also want to jump into some things about the game, and maybe, you know, since this is Nitpick Tuesday, honestly, I realize that it's much ado about nothing. The Patriots pretty much had their way with the Dolphins, as I think many of us expected that they would on Sunday. Say what you want to about, you know, Matt Castle's interception and the return by Jason Taylor and then the return of Tom Brady into the game to throw another touchdown pass to put up another score. Fact is, at 42-7 at halftime, I think that just kind of stunned everybody with its, you know, swiftful meaning. And then, you know, they hadn't scored in the second half. I frankly don't blame Bill for, you know, sending Tom Brady back in there, if only but to, you know, send a clear message to a guy like Matt. I mean, let's face it. We're one injury away from Matt Castle being in there and being the guy. And I think he wants to make sure that, you know, you're preparing every week like you have to be in there on the next play. And that I think they felt like, you know, it was a poor pass and that it was a poor read. And I think he's just sending him a little message. That would be my guess, that there's just a little message being sent here that you need to pay attention to detail because one of these days we may need you. I would also tell you that I think we could all be nitpicky over the fact that even though it was garbage time and you have a significant lead over your opponent, that, you know, you have to realize that championship teams primarily learn how to step on the jugular of an opponent. Patriots are getting there offensively, but they're not there yet defensively. Can we agree on that assessment today? This team gave up almost 400 yards of total offense to the Miami Dolphins, the team that's quarterbacked by Cleo Lemon and was without Ronnie Brown in the second half because he's now out for the year with an ACL injury. And you still gave up almost 400 yards of total offense. And you gave up over 170 on the ground. Now, I don't care who's in there, whether it's first team, second team, or eighth team. I don't care who's in there. That's unacceptable. And my guess is that that's going to be dealt with this week in some form or fashion. So there's certainly a couple of nice, tidy items to nitpick on today, on Tuesday. It is a Nitpick Tuesday, and we're, you know, you'd think that just from the pure attitude here that this team is not 7-0 for the first time in franchise history, which they are. And believe you me, it's a place in which, well, not only New England has never been, but few teams have been before. And yet, you know, over the last couple of weeks, I have sensed, and I know the PFW guys have sensed, and I'm sure even you fans have sensed, you know, a certain amount of complacency. And, well, what is there really to talk about? I mean, you can only say, well, dudes are awesome, aren't they? You can only say that so much before it gets a little bit boring and it gets a little bit tedious. And so you look for things to talk about. You look for things to sort of dissect and analyze and kick around a little bit and consider and mull over. And that's why we do this, because you look for things like that to do in an effort to discuss football as best as you can and the subjects around football. So that's why we have Nitpick Tuesday, specifically for that reason, you know, and then we break it down, you know, on Wednesdays and Thursdays when we, you know, hear from the players and the coaches and, you know, and we get the analysis from members of the media during the week on particular matchups. And you know, give you a chance to kind of delve into this a little bit. And then today, you know, after, you know, you kick a team's butt, and by the way, you know, there have been plenty of times over the years that the Dolphins have done exactly what the Patriots did to Miami this Sunday. I think it's you know, if you go back through the annals and the archives here, I think you realize that the Dolphins have beaten the crud out of the Patriots much more than the Patriots have beaten the stink out of them. So I really don't, I don't see the problem. This is a sheer gang up on New England effort by a guy like Easterbrook and some other choice members of the media as I've ever seen. And it's all, it all has to do with you know, someone getting their, you know, their feathers ruffled because of the whole Spygate story. I guarantee you there's no way that this article would have been written today if Spygate had not occurred or the Patriots hadn't gotten caught, whichever way you want to term it. It happened. We're dealing with it. The Patriots have dealt with it. Clearly some people in this world cannot deal with it. So your thoughts on the story? I'd like to know if you think there's accuracy to it. What about it do you agree with? Is it much ado about nothing? Are you going to pay it any attention? Are you going to read what this guy has to say? Are you going to send a complaint to ESPN.com? Are you, what are you going to do with it? You think it'll serve as motivation? I doubt very many people will read it. Although I'm sure that there will be guys in the locker room that, will probably pass it around. And then they'll kind of look at it and crumple it up and throw it in the trash and say, whatever. You know, you can't win when you're up on top. But I would give you this, though. I really believe that, you know, the Colts will be using this to their advantage. The Colts are loving this right now because, you know, the Patriots are the team that's looked up as the 500-pound gorilla. And the Colts are the defending champs. And last night I was convinced that they're still a pretty good team. They're better defensively than most people give them credit for. And I know we'll spend all of next week talking about that particular issue. This is setting up in 2 weeks to be a gargantuan, you know, regular season matchup. I do hope that both teams are able to get there undefeated, because I think it will really be something special, as a chance to be a special regular season football game. In the meantime, the Patriots have the Washington Redskins to play on Sunday. And if they want that chance meeting with the Colts in the regular season to be special, they have to win this Sunday. Somehow they've got to find a way to do it. And that's what we obviously will be dealing with through the course of the week this week. Webradio at Patriots.com. That's how you reach us, 508-543-7482. Your comments on Easterbrook and his column, your comments on nitpicking on the Patriots on this Nitpick Tuesday. What else are you concerned about where this football team is concerned on the field? Some of the defense bother you? Anything on the offense bother you? Attitude-wise bother you? Mistakes? Anything? What are we talking about here today? What concerns you? This is your chance to be open and honest and let me know what you think football-wise this team needs to do to continue to improve. Because now people are going to be taking shots at them left and right. Be people lying in wait. People be just can't wait to get a piece of those evil New England Patriots. We'll take your emails, phone calls, and more. Is B-Lo coming in today? Brian Lowe will be here in our 3 o'clock hour this afternoon right here inside the playbook.
Screw him!
Playoff action is back in Foxborough. Once again, your New England Revolution have advanced to the MLS playoffs and are looking for a return trip to MLS Cup.
Drives it for him, and the goal! 1-0 Revs! What a huge tally for New England!
Saturday, November 3rd at 7:30 p.m., Taylor Twellman, Pat Noonan, Matt Reese, and the rest of the Revs take to the field in Foxborough, and they want you there to cheer them on to victory.
Takes a touch! And buries it! 1-0 Revs! The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet!
Individual tickets start at just $18 and significant discounts are available for groups of 20 or more. Bring your family or group and don't miss a minute of this exciting playoff match at Gillette Stadium. Call the Revolution Ticket Office today at 1-877-GET-REVS. That's 1-877-GET-REVS to get your playoff ticks.
Get your kicks.
And get the Revolution.
The New England Revolution.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything!
Yeah, let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats! Woo!
and sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. My name is John Rook. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. Of course, the Patriots 7-0 for the first time in team history. They are the first team in NFL history to win each of its first seven games by 17 points or more. Previous record holder was the 1999 St. Louis Rams, who won their first six games by 17 or more and then lost in their seventh game. The Patriots scored 42 points, obviously, in that first half against Miami on Sunday, the highest point output in any half in franchise history. Previous single record, single half record, 41 points back in 1978 in the first half of a 55-21 win over the Jets at Schaefer Stadium. New England led that game 41-7 at halftime. The 49 points against the Dolphins, the sixth highest single-game point total in franchise history, and the highest since a 50-17 win over the Colts in 1984. Tom Brady had a perfect passer rating of 158.3. I know we've discussed this before. How does 158.3, again, get to be the perfect passer rating? I mean, you'd think it'd be on a scale of like 0 to 100 or even 200. 158.3? Does that mean that there's impossible to get 158.5? Apparently. Anyway, it was the first time that he has had a perfect passer rating for a single game in his career. His previous high was 150.9 last season. It was earlier this season against Buffalo. It's the first perfect passer rating by a Patriots player since the 1970 AFL-NFL merger. Good grief. Brady, of course, threw the franchise record six touchdown passes in the game, setting a new single-game franchise record. First player in the entire NFL to throw six in a game since Peyton Manning did it on November the 25th of 2004. The NFL record, by the way, for most touchdown passes in a game is seven. It's been done five times. Most recently, though, 1969 by Joe Capp of the Minnesota Vikings. How about that for a record? Who's to say he won't have a shot at that? Brady's added to his NFL record by throwing at least three touchdowns now in each of the season's first seven games. The previous record, of course, was five straight games to do that. That was Steve Young in 98, so Brady has extended his own NFL record in that regard.
A lot of other great superlatives, but those at least are the records that were set after the 49-28 win by the Pats on Sunday. And we'll get into a few other things as well, going over some of the individual performances with Brian Lowe from Patriots Today coming up here in just a little bit in the second hour of the program. In the meantime, a lot of emails to get to, and I know a lot of you have your own comments about Greg Easterbrook's column, the TMQ, the Tuesday Morning Quarterback column on ESPN.com, page 2. That's basically what we're going with today, in addition to our normal Nitpick Tuesdays. I do have some concerns, clearly, over allowing 380 and almost 400 yards of total offense against a Miami team. Whether it's garbage time or not, there clearly has to be focus, and you have to play without an eye toward the scoreboard. You have to keep playing. And I really believe that every player down that hallway would say the same thing. Unacceptable, no excuses, we gave up way too many points, way too many yards, we need to improve. And I think you as fans, that's exactly what you want to hear, that's what you should hear. And I think it's a little bit of a concern. I do believe it's a little bit of a concern. I do believe that an offense like what Indy will throw in 2 weeks could prove to be somewhat problematic. We're talking about a game that both teams could be in the 40s. Now that may be entertaining, but I don't think that's necessarily a way to win a championship. All right, Pat writes, got a few questions. Do you think the absence of Ben Watson and the lack of a running game, the reason why Brady was just throwing it up into double coverage because of no big tight end threat in the middle? That's how Watson had a big game against the Browns. No, I don't think so. I think Tom Brady threw it up into double coverage, especially in the particular passes caught by Randy Moss, because he felt like Moss could go get the ball. You know, certainly having Ben Watson available in the middle helps open things up. There's no doubt about that. But, if you don't have Randy Moss making those plays that he made, and by the way, the one-handed grab in the end zone was one of the most incredible catches I have ever seen, you know, in 30 years of, you know, covering the NFL. I don't know that I've ever seen anything like that play. Seen some one-handed grabs. Never seen anybody catch it with the crook or the cradle of their arm like that, in double coverage, no less. And I think that the Patriots will be that much more better when Watson is able to return. But, no, I think he threw it up there because he knew Randy could go get it. He says, one more. Does anyone on earth besides the guy who invented it know the formula for QB rating? Because Brady was asked that question, and even he didn't know. Oh, I didn't know that that was coming, Pat, but thank you anyway. I don't know. Gary, can you look that up? And we'll get the formula. Somebody may end up emailing that to us, but I'm sure that there is a particular formula for quarterback rating, how they arrive at the 158.3 for a perfect passer rating. And I need to refresh my memory with that one. So we'll do that for you, Pat. Thanks. Thomas has sent a few emails and some great graphics, Thomas. Thank you. Talking about Randy Moss and the Dolphins getting mossed. Good stuff, Thomas. This is really. I hope you have a spot where you could actually post these. We'll pass these on to the webmaster here, but some good stuff. Thank you for that. All right, Dwayne sends this. I love Greg Easterbrook's Tuesday Morning Quarterback. However, he has officially gone over the top by calling the Indy-New England game one that pits good versus evil. And then he gives us the excerpt, which he particularly seems to have an issue with. He says, Coach snaps and snarls in public, seeming to feel contempt for the American public that has brought him wealth and celebrity. Victory seems to give Bill Belichick no joy, and defeat throws him into fury. And we read that excerpt. Thank you, Dwayne. Appreciate that. Tony says, huge Pats fan since the Sullivans, except for Fred Kirsch. Hey, I think he's being funny here. Anyway, watched the Colts last night, and I have to tell you, I think they might be better than the Patriots. They've played a tougher schedule by far than we have, and while they haven't played any offensive powerhouses, their defense looks very stout against the run. And when they can stop the run with a lineman, that frees up Sanders to roam deep down the field. To this point, it looks like the Colts have the better D. Pats have given up lots of running room all year, bad red zone defense, etc., and the better run game. Quarterback level is a push, I hate to say. Receivers probably the Pats' only clear advantage. Well, I don't know that that's the case, Tony. I don't know that overall the Colts have the better defense. I'd say that I think you could make an argument for them being somewhat equal on defense. I think that the Patriots down linemen are at least every bit as good. I think their linebackers are better. I think you might say that the secondary is a wash. You could. But I think that the Patriots offense right now is better than what the Colts are providing. And again, that's right now. I may change my mind in a week. And again, we'll try to deal with more of this next week anyway. Enjoy listening, but while listening, I've been surfing the net and came across the article by some, I believe he is going to call him nicely, a wanker named Greg Easterbrook, who called good versus evil. Anyway, I bid you farewell from London, Old England. Question, remember we were 5-5 the first Super Bowl year and the greatest show on turf? They were lighting up the entire league, and we know what happened in the end. Thank you, Mark. Mark writing from London. Thomas, by the way, sends the graphic, and it shows of the good versus evil story. It has Tony Dungy on the left, bathed in a white light with a halo, and then the graphic good versus evil in the middle, and Bill Belichick bathed in dark red and orange with horns sticking out of his head. Yeah, I think it's a bit much myself. Mark, that guy is crazy. What did the Patriots do to him? Give me a break. The Colts, the good guys, who was the first to start complaining when our DBs would hit them after 5 yards? They wouldn't stop complaining 2 years after that. I think that writer is just trying to stir controversy. May very well be, Mark. By the way, here's the formula for quarterback passer rating. Let's see. You've got A, B, and C, and D. You've got four components. A is the completions divided by attempts. B is the touchdowns divided by attempts. C is 9.5. I don't even understand this. Is this like algebra?
It was my understanding that there would be no math.
Yeah, no kidding. Interceptions, 9.5, 9.5 minus interceptions divided by attempts, and then yards divided by attempts. It says the A, B, C, and D cannot be greater than 2.375 or less than 0. And then you add A plus B plus C plus D and divide it by 0.06.
It was my understanding that there would be no math.
Who the hell decided 0.06 was a factor in this? I don't know. I'm not sure I understand it any better now by looking at it. I'm really not sure who made that up. I don't know. Oh, really, it was my understanding there would be no math in this. All right, David sends this article. David, our friend from the Philippines. Nice to hear from you, Dave. It's probably past your bedtime. Okay, John, here's what I tried to post as a comment to that article. One, Bill Belichick is not a people person. He's never been a people person, and expecting someone like that to change overnight based on an incident like Spygate shows no understanding of human nature at all. Two, classifying the entire Patriots team as evil is a total cheap shot. ESPN should be getting better for whatever they are they're paying this writer. The Pats and their ownership do many things for charity. They visit our troops overseas. They provide aid for disaster victims and visit schools just like the other teams. Every team and every other organization having people in it has good and a bad side, good and bad days, good and bad aspects in all things. By the way, I believe we have something here called the Patriots Charitable Foundation, for which has long been established here. But unfortunately, some writers in their attempt to get their feelings out step all over facts. He says, number three, we don't know how many other teams did or still do steal signs, but we do know that all the teams have known for years that their signs could be stolen. So what the Pats did, while certainly wrong, isn't nearly as big a deal as the author of this piece of junk article would have you believe. Number four, of course the Patriots passed. Their number one running back, Maroney, has been out for 3 weeks with a hamstring and was pulled out before halftime. Their second-string running back, Morris, is injured and out for the next few weeks at least. Their third-string running back, Falk, is mainly a pass-catching receiver. If Dungy had that team with Brady and that set of receivers, he'd pass too. He's too good a coach not to. Why on earth would anyone try to run in that situation? And finally, point differential is part of the playoff seeding system. Why wouldn't the team try to score? This whole article is just stupid. I expect better from ESPN. I would think that if anybody individually, if you really have a gripe or have a disagreement with the article, you do need to email ESPN. Having worked there, and I still do work there from time to time, they do read emails. I know they skip around a bit, but if the volume comes in one way or the other, they will read it. And my guess is that someone will let this gentleman know what New England fans think, and my guess is that we might even get a little extra news next week in his column. Who knows? Maybe that's exactly what they want. So you could also go the opposite direction and say, I'm not wasting my time. After today, I think I'm going to tend to go that route, but we'll just kind of wait and see. because, quite frankly, I think in a lot of ways we're pushing the envelope on slander here. And I want to wait and see if he crosses the line here, because then somebody's going to get rich and somebody is going to lose a job. Carmine in St. Catharines. John, this clown has no understanding of how to win and what it takes to win. If the Patriots players begin to believe they are taking unfair advantage and back off and not try as hard, isn't this a recipe for loss? Isn't there a team in the NFL that can't finish a game to win, letting close games slip past them into a loss? The killer instinct is what a football player needs to keep the pressure on until the last whistle blows. I think you could probably sell that last little bit to a guy like, I don't know, Mike Vrabel, who's been accused of being a cheap player because he plays until the whistle blows. I think that's what all players are generally coached to do. Ray from Springfield. While listening to Patriots Playbook after PFW, I listened to John Rook. Oh, that's me, Ray. Nice to hear from you. My question to you guys is, did you not invite him to join the Patriots organization? Why can't this guy get it through his thick skull that the Patriots are doing exactly what they do when playing games? That was last week. Let's move on. As far as running up scores, aren't these players paid to play the game, i.e., offensive players are paid to score, defensive players are paid to stop scoring? Both teams on the field are being paid to play, so stop whining when the Pats score more than your team does. And as far as Easterbrook is concerned, Pats fans don't need him around, as he was obviously the kid who always got picked last due to his lack of ability. And just as obvious is the fact that the only way he can get anyone to read his column is by using Howard Stern-like tactics and trying to create controversy. Now, I think if he was actually using Howard Stern-like tactics, Ray, he'd bring in some hookers or something while he's doing it. This is keep on scoring points, and let's try to keep the next few opponents to under 10 to see what a perfect team looks like, and screw the babies that are forgetting. This is what the players are paid to do. All right, Ray, good email. Thank you for contributing to the show today. Andy in Vermont says, I think it's all sour grapes. Are you kidding me? Easterbrook is a moron. How can he say we don't know what's on the tapes? Everybody got to see it on freaking Fox or on YouTube, which is where I saw it. I heard Bill B on Patriots Monday talking about what they have been doing. Look what happened to the Titans and Texans game. He wants to make sure they don't lose. Running all scenarios through his mind and explained himself very well, and if this Easterbrook is listening, maybe he can get that interview on the big show and listen to Bill's reasoning. I wonder who he roots for on Sunday. If they were dominating like the Patriots, would he be saying this? Maybe he's a Jets fan. I actually think he is a Jets fan. I know he does. He's covered a lot of New York sports. I know he's covered the Giants and the Jets frequently in the past. So maybe he is. David in Virginia says, I would not give it any attention. Stay above it like the Patriots do. Okay? I will take that under advisement. Let's see. What else do we have here? Here we go. Nori from Paisley, Scotland. Haven't heard from you in a while, Nori. Glad to hear from you. Says, John, I have long given up reading Greg Easterbrook's TMQ column, as the guy obviously has a problem with the Patriots, which spans a lot further back than Videogate. The guy comes across to me as he probably likes the sound of his own voice, probably more to be pitied than scolded. Nobody is claiming that all the Patriots have done has all been good, but hey, that's life in modern-day sports. As for the Colts being whiter than white and never moaning, wasn't Bill Polian the one who kept complaining about the Patriots' overzealous tackling? The result being that the officials were told to lighten up contact, especially by the DBs. You would be correct about that, Nori. Absolutely correct. And I believe Mr. Polian is the one who has been caught in the press box here at Gillette Stadium, pounding his fist on the table and telling his players, to no one in particular, to break Doug Flutie's effing leg. I believe we had several people actually hear him say that. But, you know, hey, we forget about that, and Mr. Easterbrook doesn't know that or didn't take the time to learn that. He says, as for running up the score, why does the NFL have this problem? Every other sport on the planet, or outside the USA anyway, fans expect teams to run up the score. I've lost count on the amount of 7-0 and 8-0 soccer games I've witnessed over the years. I honestly can't see why it's deemed unsporting to achieve the aim of the game, score more points than the other team. Good days to be a Patriot and Red Sox fan. Keep up the good work and a great show. Thanks, Nori, and thank you for sending us the email. It's always good to hear from you. You're always welcome. Nori makes some very good points. You know, I think we all realize that if we were on the receiving end of a game that was out of hand, I think there would definitely be some grumbling about it. It's the nature of the beast. sports are such that you always have a winner and a loser, and one side is going to be happy and another side is going to be upset. And the side that is upset is always going to look for something that they can hang their hat on, philosophically, mentally, emotionally, to help them get through the disappointment of being, well, disappointed. And so if you can rationalize in your mind that, oh, well, they ran up the score, that's not fair, you know, it makes you feel better about yourself. It makes you feel better about your team. Oh, they ran up the score on us. Well, so they must be bad. You know, how many times is it, for those of you that have been Patriots fans for a long time, how many times have you been on the receiving end of that? Now you know what it's like on the other side. Now you know what it's like to be the big guy. Now you know what it's like to do the pounding. And you have to admit, you know, you're still getting hit from both sides. At least when you're the bad guy or when you stink and you're getting hit and getting and scored upon, at least you know where it's coming from. Now you're getting hit from both sides here. So there really isn't a perfect world. You just kind of have to learn to take it, move on, and basically say, eh, sour grapes. If anything, the people who complain about running up the score, they're the poor sports. I think you realize that. And I think, actually, whether or not he was trying to make a point, or maybe, you know, maybe there is some validity to the fact that, you know, they're all still ticked off about the whole Spygate story, and they're, you know, they're basically putting pedal to metal, as I described in the opening part of the show today. And, you know, they want to beat the crud out of people in order to erase any doubt of all, at all, that there's any sleight of hand going on about the other championships in this year. Although you can't do anything about the other championships. Those are gone. Those are done. They're in the books. And for anybody to assume that, you know, they're tainted is just you're wrong. You'd have to go back and do quite a bit of research. And if someone wants to take the time to go and dig that up, that's fine. It's not going to change the outcome. The NFL is not going to expunge the records. They're not going to do that. Because what they would do, they would put anything and everything from here on out into question. And the NFL doesn't want that. That's why the NFL is putting this under the rug. If somebody erred, and if the Patriots are guilty, they're paying a heavy fine for it. And my guess is that you know, at some point or some form or fashion, someone in this organization, whether it's Bill or somebody else, has learned their lesson. It's not going to happen again. Like I told you earlier, I think it's due to sheer arrogance, and it's due to the desire to gain whatever little edge you think you need in order to win a game on any given Sunday. These people are so thorough in their preparation, they will leave no stone unturned. And if they determine that their interpretation of a particular rule is different from what anybody else is interpreting it, they're going to do that if they think it'll give them an edge. And even if that edge is not a great big edge, which I don't think this was, they're still going to do it. Why? Because they're driven, motivated, focused. Okay, use the word maniacal. But it's what makes them what they are, and it's why that they win, and it's why this organization and this team is doing what it's doing on the field right now. So call it what you want, but it's just part of the package here. And I don't really think that, you know, it's going to continue to have shelf life. I told you this right after it started. I said this is something we're all going to live with for the rest of the season. It's still going to keep coming up in various pockets around the country. Just wait for Super Bowl week if we're fortunate to get that far. It will be a huge topic. John writes, he says, who the hell is this guy Easterbrook? Oh, that's the point. Nobody looking for fame. Don't worry about looking up Sybarite. So did Easterbrook. So now Brady's a bad guy for who he dates? Well, isn't that an insult to models and actresses? Can you say jealous? Maybe because his significant other most likely resembles Mimi from the Drew Carey Show, or possibly Drew Carey. All right, well, we don't need to get into name-calling here. This guy's whole life is behind a laptop in his underwear watching reruns of the OC because he can't afford cable. This is a diehard Colts fan, and he's in position to have a sounding board at his disposal. Talk about unprofessional. Their coach snaps and snarls in public, seeming to feel contempt for the American public that has brought him wealth and celebrity. Right. Because as we all know, Bill is such a captivating interview during press conferences. This guy is a joke. This is reminiscent of the articles written about Coach Bill for pushing the photographer. photographer. Start looking around the rest of the NFL and see if the rest of the league still looks like angels. I doubt it. Plenty of NFLers are being arrested and suspended, but you will not hear about them this season. Pats are fair game for anything people want to throw at them, and because of Spygate, we just have to sit back and take it. If we complain about Easterbrook, he just gets more notoriety. If we do nothing, others will jump on his bandwagon. He says, thanks for letting me vent. He says, oh, by the way, bleep to Fred Kirsch for saying, and I quote, Rodney Harrison sucks last week. What game did he watch? Did he say that last week?
I think it was Tom.
Tom said that. Yeah, that's what I thought. Take what those guys say with a grain of salt, okay? That's all I can tell you. Sometimes for as much football as some of those guys watch, I also wonder what they're watching. I'm not naming names. I try to get along with everybody here. That's why, opinions are like, you know what, everybody has one. John, I don't agree with Easterbrook at all. I would like to know how he can write that in ESPN and let him post that. Well, honestly, Mark, this is Mark with a C from New Hampshire here. First of all, like I explained earlier, ESPN lets him write that because they know it'll create controversy. It'll create readership. Probably they'll get a little hit on the website, a little blurb on the website when people go to the article to read, such drivel that he's writing. And they love that. As long as they're getting traffic, they don't care. As long as it's creating controversy, they don't really care. So you're really damned if you do and damned if you don't by reacting. I mean, we react because it's shocking. And then when you react the other way, well, that's exactly what they want you to do. That's what columnists and opinion makers do. Talk show hosts do it. You say outlandish things. Why? To get a rise out of people. That's why. Whether you believe it or not. But the whole point of this exercise today is that this guy's, what he's saying, he's got particular, as I mentioned earlier, vitriol behind it. He's calling people names, which is totally sophomoric and uncalled for, and it borders on slander. And so, I said it borders because this is his opinion. But I think if push comes to shove, I think, you could probably make some very nervous times for him if enough people complained. Frankly, I think a nice little note from the Patriots Charitable Foundation would be appropriate. Let's see. Oh, he also says, also, their pass defense really scares me. I feel like the secondary could be vulnerable against the Colts like the last 2 years. I remember watching the game, and Manning would complete the pass, and there wouldn't be a cornerback even in the picture on TV. Maybe they're just playing like that because of the lead. We'll have to see November 4th. Mark is nitpicking, as again, this is Nitpick Tuesdays. Pass defense, I'll tell you, I guess if you had to look at any particular aspect of the defense, I guess it would have to be the secondary, even though I think that they've done a fairly representative job. I'm really just concerned more with defense as a whole and red zone defense. I don't see I don't see appreciable improvement. Some improvement, slight improvement, but I don't see appreciable improvement from week 1 through week 7. That concerns me. I don't see a lot of improvement in the kicking game. I see, it is what it is, but I don't see anything else. That concerns me. I see less of production in the running game. And yes, I know that, there's been injuries here, but it still concerns me. Anything else? Just a concern. It's not bad. It's not horrible. Team is, number 1 in total offense. I believe they're number 7 or number 8 overall in rushing offense still. So, overall, you'd have to say the picture's, still pretty good, but it's a trend. It's a tendency, and I don't like the way that it's trending. And I hope that it's something can be adjusted. I also don't like the fact that they gave up 380 yards of offense to Miami. Garbage time or not. You are at least 21 points, if not more than that, better than the Dolphins, and you need to play like it. Diane sends this from Bridgeport, Connecticut. John, the writer you just spoke about has a very rigid view of right and wrong. He's obviously very angry that Bill is not explaining to his satisfaction what he was taping and how the information was used, and he's unwilling to accept the league's judgment, so he wants to dole it out himself. Brady is only 30, and he has a right to live his own life his own way. A team with a lead always has a right to bring in new and unskilled players to give them experience, and if that leads to more scores, that's okay. It's not piling it on. It's called training. The bottom line is this guy's a bit sick. Diane, I would tend to agree with you. But you can't let your work get in the way. You can't let it get in, can't let your feelings get in the way of your job. I think that that's what's happening here. And maybe his intent is to do nothing but get a rise out of Patriots Nation. You know, okay, that's fine. But, you know, one of these days, what you write is going to come back to slap you in the face. One of these days, you're going to go too far. And he's pushing the envelope with it right here, in my own opinion. Craig in South Carolina sends a note, a copy of a note, that he apparently emailed to Mike Golic and Mike Greenberg on Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio. See, Gary's already blown you up, Craig. So he sends me a copy of the email here, and he says, Golic, you've taken one too many to the head, my friend. You think that Manning is better than Brady? Consider the following. Brady has won 3 Super Bowls with barely pedestrian wide receivers, okay, running backs, and makeshift linemen. He did not have much offensive talent around him. His numbers were still better than most other quarterbacks. Guys were not getting open, and if they did, they were not explosive. Having one good receiver like Branch is in no way as advantageous as having 3 good wide receivers, a good tight end, and a running back. He played as well then as he is playing now. His numbers are off the charts this year because he finally has a very talented crew around him, and you are seeing him reach his true potential. Imagine the numbers he would have put up if he had played for 9 seasons like Manning with the Pats' existing offensive weapons, or imagine the numbers he would have put up with the Colts' offensive weapons. Sorry, Golic, but Brady has always been better and is proving it now that he has weapons comparable to the Colts. Get real, dude. Straighten him out, Greeny. Thank you, Craig. Did they read your email on the air, I wonder? I wonder. Actually, if Golic said that, I'm a little disappointed in him. I think he probably said that just to be a contrarian. I mean, you know, look, can we all agree here? They're both great quarterbacks. Manning finally got a Super Bowl, and Brady's finally got talent around him. I think it's fair to say that if you put Tom Brady on Indy, the Colts would still win, and if you brought Peyton Manning to New England, the Patriots would still win. Isn't arguing who's best a little like saying what's better, 4 quarters or a dollar bill? I think they're the same. They both do great things. They may not exactly be the same quarterback, but the end result is they both win. And they can both play well with good talent around them. I mean, if you think Brady is better, fine. If you think Manning is better, fine. I believe we've kind of gone past this argument now, have we not? Let's see, who wrote this one? Nick writes this one. He says, after seeing the Pats-Dallas Dolphins games and then seeing the Colts last night, I have great concerns about our November 4th matchup. Hell, about Washington even. Number one, our blocking is atrocious. In the Dallas game, we misblocked deep in the end zone 6 times to the point of escape. I'm not sure what that means. We misblocked deep in the end zone 6 times? I'm not sure what that means. Any ideas what that means?
All I can think is the Marion Barber run.
Oh, okay, maybe. But that didn't have anything to do with blocking. That has everything to do with tackling.
Yeah, no idea.
Okay. Number two, our running game, for obvious reasons, although we are deep in that position, down to your 3 and 4, has to be concerning. Maroney thus far has proven to be good, but quite a fragile player. Well, I'll have to agree with you there. I will agree with you that, you know, you have to be a little bit concerned about the running game because Maroney is not durable. I realize he's not even a season and a half through his professional career, but I get the impression he's been off the field more than he's been on it in his career. I mean, he's just now reached, what, close to 1,000 yards for his career rushing? Don't you think he should have been there by now? I don't know. I share the same concern about the running game as you do, Nick. And he says, number three, we gave up more than 2 touchdowns to Miami. Even though the inordinate time possession of Miami, it had much to do with the Pats' success in scoring quite fast, helping to keep away from our running issues. There is no way Ronnie Brown should have not been contained in the box. He was not. There is no way that we should have not had a couple of sacks that we ended up with. On the other hand, seeing the Colts struggle with a good defensive team, putting up 28 points and allowing only 7, even though the quarterback got knocked out of the game. And given all the above, I am a concerned Pats fan. I'm hoping that the Pats can do their usual, come up with whatever compensating measures are required, not to have an undefeated season, but to get us to the Super Bowl and win it. Washington will be a more difficult test for us than Dallas, a game, however, that I remain confident we will win, albeit a guarded confidence. Well, Nick, I won't agree with you there. I think Dallas is a better team than Washington. And that the fact that you've got the Redskins here at home on Sunday, I definitely think is in the Patriots' favor. I certainly believe that the Patriots, even at this early juncture, will win the game on Sunday. I haven't really formulated out a lot of thoughts yet on the Redskins, which I'll be doing over the course of the next couple of days. And I'll share a lot of that with you, as I'm sure you guys will be sharing with me, which is what this show is all about. But I don't think it'll be a more difficult test than Dallas. No, I'm not buying that at all. I think the Cowboys were a very good test. I think the Patriots passed it with flying colors. I think what the Patriots have to do almost is guard against themselves. They have to guard against complacency. They have to remain vigilant. They have to continue to improve. They have to stay sharp on defense as well as offense. Tackling is an issue on defense. Red zone defense is an issue. Field position, kicking game is an issue. The running game is an issue. They're not crises, they're issues. It's different. Because they are, after all, beating people by a minimum of 17 points every game. Like I said, this is Nitpick Tuesday. We're picking nits here. All is well. All is well, as Kevin Bacon says in Animal House. Here we go. This one comes from Chris, who's in Afghanistan. God bless you, Chris. Stay safe for us, William. He says, couldn't believe what you were saying, so checked it out whilst on my first night off in five patrolling. Been a fan since 82 as the team closest to the UK, and don't look at them through rose-tinted specs. How can anyone whose favorite all-time player is John Hanna don't give this jumped-up twat any airtime or the oxygen of publicity? Okay, sorry about that. Send him to me for a week. I'll show him good versus evil. It's a culvert bomb in a crowded food market or an RPG fired through a school bus at you on foot patrol. Love to see him have the stomach to write any bleep after a week here. It comes from Chris, who is from Scotland on patrol in Afghanistan. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate that. Thanks for taking the time to write. Here we go. Mike from Columbus, Ohio. John, ironically, the 1972 Dolphins beat the Patriots 52-0 in Miami on their way to a perfect season. As far as who has run up the score more frequently, winning by 20 points or more, like the Patriots did last week, let's see, Dolphins 13, Patriots 5. Okay, let's go through the scores here, just to briefly go through it here. 1967, 41-10 Dolphins. 1968, 34-10 Dolphins. 68, 38-7, 71, 41-3, 72, 52-0, 73, 44-23, 1980, 34-0, 1992, 38-17. So, okay, I get the point. Good stuff, Mike. Thank you for doing the research. That's good. I knew that there had to be some instances of Miami running up the score on New England. And he says, what would Easterbrook say about the evil 1972 Dolphins running up the score on the poor Patriots? Which, as you already pointed out, was 52-0 Miami. Good email, Mike. Good email. Way to go. Jimmy in Orlando sends this. He says, I just have to say this about the Patriot hater. Up yours. I have this to say about the upcoming game with the Colts. Remember, they barely beat us last year with a much less talented offense and defense with the addition of Thomas and our receiver corps. So I may be a little concerned about the way the game will go. I hope they rattle Manning early and watch him have his meltdown. All right, well, Jimmy, thanks for the email. Again, that's next week. Save that good stuff for next week. There's another game to play. And I think that may be one of the biggest problems that you have to face this week. Is looking pie this week. It seems like many of you are ready to just go right past this week against Washington and go right on to the Colts. Wow. I'm a little surprised. Frankly, I'm a little surprised. I know that down the hallway there won't be any talk. Anybody tries to bring up the Colts? No, we're not playing the Colts this week. We're playing the Redskins. You won't get word one out of them about it. Not one. It'll wait until next week. That's the biggest thing. So let's see if we can follow suit here. I mean, you know, there is another game to play. We'll toe the company line on that one. You gotta worry about the game that's in front of you. Can't do anything about the Colts. If you start focusing on the Colts now, you are doomed to failure. You can stub your toe, and wouldn't that be awful? Wouldn't you just hate to stub your toe against a Washington team that you know you should beat? I mean, what was the early line today? 16, I believe. 16! You know, so that would make them, what, about a 12 or 13-point favorite if it were in Washington? 16 here at home. And the Redskins aren't bad. They're pretty good. What are they, 4-2? Yeah, so, you know, hey. Steve in Montana, from what I've been able to ascertain, Patriots have never been charged with nor been found guilty of cheating. The league sanctioned them for breaking a rule regarding taping during the game that was against the rule. Nothing regarding what was done with those tapes has been indicated on the official record. All allegations regarding cheating are merely that, allegations, and unfounded at that. That being said, it must be obvious to anyone who is not in the same envy-ridden boat that Eastbrook is in that his article has simply been used as a vehicle for emoting an irrational rant. I believe that in the long run, he will be the one who takes the hit for what he has written, not the Patriots. His article will only serve to give the Pats more motivation to beat the Colts, as if they needed it. Thank you, Steve. Steve in Montana. Brian in Jamestown sends this. Is it just me? Or is it Peyton Manning, or is Peyton Manning impervious to this running up the score nonsense? He's been padding his numbers since he's entered the league, but everyone seems to think he's wonderful for it. Personally, I would love to see the Patriots run up the score every game. Specifically, I'd love to see Tom Brady blow away Manning's records. I'd go so far as to say I'd rather see Tom's name in the record books than win another Super Bowl. Well, I don't know if I'd go that far, Brian. Ultimately, champions are remembered. Records are, you know, records. He's done a lot of hard work here. He's won 3 Super Bowls for New England. It would be great to be able to give something back in the form of all the single-season records. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate that. Speaking of Brian, where's Brian Lowe?
He's waiting a phone call. He'll be here any minute.
Okay. Gotcha. Ken in Florida says, how is it possible that no one has mentioned the fact that the 1972 Dolphins beat, and beat is not a strong enough word, the Pats 52-0? Ken, you'd probably sent that right as we were talking about it, huh? The only time I have ever seen the Pats run up the score was the Week 13 game in 1998 hosting the Bills when Buffalo refused to take the field for the point after at the very end of the game following a Bledsoe Coates touchdown. Pete Carroll ordered the 2-point conversion and Vinatieri ran it in. Final score of that game was 25-21. Really tired of hearing the hate, Ken in Florida. Ken, thank you. Appreciate that. You know, all I can tell you about one, you know, being tired of hearing the hate is that, you know, that's what happens when you're up on top. People are going to always take shots at the kingpin. And, of course, the ironic thing about all this is that the Patriots are not the defending Super Bowl champions, which is why, as I mentioned in the opening hour of this program today, the Colts are loving this. They're loving this. Let all of the attention go to New England. And then when we beat them in a couple of weeks, whenever it'll be, that's fine. Whatever you want to fixate yourself with, that'll be fine. But that's just what happens when, you know, you steamroll people, and you steamroll people to the extent that, you're beating them by 17 or more for 7 straight weeks. Nobody in the NFL has ever done that. Nobody. So, I'm afraid, you know, I realize you're getting tired of it, but it's going to stay. And if they whack the Colts in a couple of weeks, it's going to continue to stay. And then, of course, the Patriots won't be the beloved Patriots. They won't be America's team. And there will be everybody in the entire league will then be ganged up against New England. Who are you rooting for in the Super Bowl? ABN, anybody but New England. It's exactly what the saying and the battle cry around the entire NFL will be. You think I'm wrong? Nah. I don't think I'm wrong. I think that's exactly how it's going to turn out. Jason in New Haven, Connecticut, says, John, my only nitpick is that I've had to stop watching Patriots today because every time I see B-Lo, I can't help but think that he resembles that Jared guy from the Subway commercials. Has anybody else told him that, Gary? Yeah, lots. Okay. Once he appears on the show, I can't concentrate on any information that he is talking about because all I can think about is what I want to have for lunch. Is it just me, or do you see any resemblance when he is there in person with you? Yeah, I guess I hadn't really thought about it, but yeah, I can see the resemblance. No, I have to admit that I don't think about that. I think about who could be in the studio in here instead of Bryant. And she's not. So it's just the way it works, you know? Christina Acra.
She's hot, too.
Yeah, well, let's face it. It is what it is. All right, here we go. This one comes from Igor in Serbia. It says, Igor from Serbia. Okay, Igor. He says, come on, John, don't get so worked up about Easterbrook. A lot of people were irritated by his column in the past and complained about it. But that's just what he does. It's his sense of humor. He's only half serious. I don't want to defend him, but you can't really say he's completely out of line. Of course, it all started with the video gate. I'm reading him for years now, and I think in a couple of seasons back, he was singing praises to the Pats, especially the O-line composed of Houdats. I think he was still on NFL.com back then. And he's a very popular sports columnist with a pretty big readership. I'd love to hear a verbal fist fight between the two of you, though, so please try and get him on the phone. There you go, Gary. We can make the call, right?
Screw him!
That would be the highlight of the season thus so far, what with all these boring Pats games. The crack in the armor is not showing, and I don't think it will. And no one really wants to see an invincible team. Not like this one anyway, because the way they are playing now is so dry and uninventive, almost inhuman. And coming to that, I must admit I much more enjoyed the offense back when Weiss was the offensive coordinator. They didn't have that much talent, but the plays and schemes were downright ingenious and a thrill to watch. Back then, Brady had an exciting, winning last drive every other game. That's why I was furious last night when watching the PTI guys at halftime of the Monday Night Football game saying that Brady isn't the best quarterback of all time because he lacks memorable last-minute winning drives. Did you see that? No, I did not see that. Did they really say that? Did they really say that? What the hell are they talking about?
There's one or two drives I could think of.
Hello? 2001 Super Bowl against the Rams? Oh, that just comes to mind right off the top of the head. I can't believe that they really said that last night.
I think it was Kornheiser.
Oh, Tony. You know, I'd normally love Tony. I'm one of the few that actually likes Tony in the booth. And the reason I do is because he's there to be somewhat irreverent, and he's there to kind of goose jaws, you know, and add a little mix to it. He's not there to be an analyst. That's not what they're paying him to do. He's there to basically be the... Who's the idiot that they put in there as the third man in the
booth?
Dennis
Miller.
Thank you. He's the guy. He's there to be Dennis Miller. He's another failed experiment, if you will. But I actually like Tony. I've always liked his work. I appreciate his columns. They're somewhat irreverent. I like the PTI show with Michael Wilbon because they're irreverent to each other. Like a couple of guys sitting at a bar or a couple of brothers arguing over a beer over what's best. So I actually appreciate Tony for what he is. But if he really said that last night, then that was a blatant attempt of getting a rise out of people, because that could not be more incorrect and more stupid. That was dumb. Lacks memorable last-minute winning drives. That may be one of the all-time great ones right there. How quickly we forget, Igor says. He says, I mean, if they needed something to pick at, they could have found something other than that. If I would... try to nitpick, I'd mention those two totally bad throws resulting in Moss's touchdowns on Sunday. Well, I don't know that they're necessarily bad throws. I think in both of those throws, what he's trying to do is put the ball up there so Randy can go get it. I mean, he was double covered after all. Tom threw into double coverage on both of those instances. And, he, you know, well, I'll take a shot. Under normal circumstances, you wouldn't throw that to a receiver because you wouldn't think that a normal receiver would have an opportunity. But he knew that he had a shot because the guy's Randy Moss. And because he's made those kind of plays in the past. So, I mean, I realize, you know, that's a nitpick. But, I mean, frankly, I think he threw those passes with a purpose. He threw those passes simply because, you know, he knew that he had a shot of getting them complete, even in double coverage. At least that would be, you know, at least my viewpoint. Brian Lowe, welcome.
Matt Light was asked about those plays after the game. And he was basically said, are those, like, in the playbook or whatever? He's like, well, they are now. I don't think those are plays that are drawn up. I think that was purely, and I don't even know what context you were saying that email was in, but those plays were, I'm throwing it up there, you're bigger and better than the defenders you're going
go
up against.
Go get the ball.
I don't, just get it. And, right. Boy, can anyone do it better than Randy Moss? One hand, two guys on him. I don't know if those guys have been cut yet by the Dolphins, but they might want to consider. Cameron Worrell, rough day to be him, huh?
Yeah.
He was a victim of the spin move by Dante Stallworth.
Tough day to be anybody.
He's on both
on the
of those.
And by the way, I can't believe that more people haven't really complained about Jason Taylor's run into the end zone.
Or Joey Porter's sack dance.
That too. Joey Porter sack dance.
Yeah. That's what I said earlier.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're down by how much?
But
I
at least 21.
Right. And that was not.
But I expect that from Joey Porter. I didn't expect that from Jason Taylor.
Right. I would agree with you there. Joey Porter's got a history of just being
an ass.
Yeah, pretty much. And you know, by the way, nice sack, but it was a coverage. I mean, it was, you know, Brady had 10 seconds, starts scrambling. All right, you beat Matt Light. It happens. And you're still down by 30-something points. And I believe it was the next play, or it was during that drive, that was one of the touchdowns. It was on a touchdown drive by the Patriots. I don't remember which one it was. Taylor, I mean, that was a little surprising. But, I mean, that was just a little hop, step, leap or whatever. And, go. I don't know, what kind of – was he celebrating? Was he overly celebrating? I know what you're talking about, the jump into the end zone there. That was a little surprising. But, hey, you know. You get caught up in the moment, probably. But Joey Porter, he's just, you know, a buffoon.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that. That's both of those things are somewhat problematic. But Taylor, just because you think he was better than that.
Right, right. Now the Patriots haven't had any experiences yet this year where they're losing in games. But, you know, there are definitely some players in the Patriots who enjoy celebrating plays. So you hope that if they were in a similar circumstance and they're down by 21, that they're not going to be, you know, celebrating these plays. You know, you make your play, you're still down by 3 touchdowns, move on to the next one.
Right. By the way, Igor sends in a note. He says it was Wilbon, apparently, that said that about last night, about Brady not having any memorable comebacks. Well, I'm really disappointed because actually he's the current columnist. Tony's off doing other things now.
Yeah.
Kornheiser, but they said last night that the reason that Brady apparently was not the better of the two quarterbacks because he didn't have any memorable game-winning drives.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Wow. I mean, we could probably come up with, I mean, you know.
Like I said, the first one that comes to mind would be 0-1 Super Bowl.
Did they come back in that one?
Yeah.
0-1. Well,
when John Madden was telling them to pull up and go for overtime, Brady's leading the team down the field to win a Super Bowl.
Right. How about a couple weeks earlier against Oakland as well?
Oh.
You know,
Snowball.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that game comes to mind.
Yeah.
How about even Monday night against Denver in 03?
Well,
that was a good one. David Givens' touchdown.
That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad.
He's had a few, and, you know.
In fact, that's really bad. I've lost a little bit of respect for Michael Wilbon because that's somebody that's just flying off the handle. That's ignorant is what that is.
I'm sure we could come up with a few more, too.
That's plain ignorance. All right, here we go. John, touching on the crap about Spygate for the season. I was in Vegas this weekend while I was sitting at a Let It Ride table. There was a nice couple with Steelers jerseys on there with me. I looked and said, big game for you guys tonight. We started talking football, and I mentioned that I was a Pats fan. The nice girl said, oh, you guys killed Miami today, huh? I just smiled and said, yep, they look good. She was silent for a minute and then said, yeah, because you cheated.
Oh.
Just passing that along, I was tempted to say, too bad about your team losing to the Cardinals, but I just laughed.
This was what day?
This was Sunday.
This was right after the game, so before the Sunday night game between the Steelers, the ballyhooed Steelers who lost.
Oh, I guess it must have been in
between. That was a night, you know, a couple hours there in between.
Right. And then, of course, later, they lose to Denver. Says, keep up the good work. I'm really excited about the Skins game this week. Looking forward to seeing their D versus our offense. Brian from San Francisco, send that email. That's good.
All right.
Yeah, because you cheated. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get a lot of that, so get used to it.
I don't think the cheating stuff has much pertinence to too many of these games. When you're playing the Dolphins, you're really,
To any Steelers fans listening, you all suck.
Wow. John, come on. You didn't.
Thank you.
To any
Steelers fans listening, you all suck. That was reading an email. Last year, I read an email and the person said that, and so I read it verbatim.
To
any Steeler fans listening, you all suck.
And wow,
of course, Gary is now killing me with it, and he continues to kill me with it a year later. So, what can I tell you?
Gary, always the culprit.
Of course he is. Of course he is. He's the man with the magic buttons.
Always the culprit.
Sucky, sucky, sucky.
That's right.
Jimmy in Orlando says, Deadskins, good team, not great, no offense, good defense, no comeback power. If we run up the score early, they're done. How's that for a topic? He's complaining because I was actually going on about how people are talking about Brady versus Manning, and I believe that would be a next week topic.
Well, it could be an any week topic. I know that there were a few graphics in Monday Night Football last night. I think Brady Manning, I think that's... I think that's an any week topic. It's a little more tantalizing than Brady Campbell.
Yeah, no kidding. I found myself, I think it was it last night, night before, maybe Sunday night, saying, okay, who's the Washington quarterback again?
Yeah.
Jason Campbell, really?
Well, you know what, the Patriots are continuing a four-week span right now in which they're facing quarterbacks who have never played the Patriots before.
Wow.
And, yeah. You got Campbell.
Well, that's a good point. Thank you for adding a little fact to the conversation here.
All right, I'm done. That's all I got.
Good night, everybody. You know,
Campbell,
I'll be here all week.
Campbell, Cleo Lemon this past week, Romo, and right before that was Derek Anderson.
Derek Anderson, correct.
And if you include Trent Edwards from, you know, he didn't start that game but played the bulk of it, that's five out of their first eight games, quarterbacks who, you know, who have never,
well,
never
now,
faced Patriots.
I'm not sure how to take that. Because if the Patriots, you know, part of my nitpick Tuesday today, Brian, is the fact that, frankly, I'm a little concerned that this team, even if it may have been garbage time, I'm a little concerned this team gave up almost 400 yards of offense to Miami.
Yeah.
And in that light, seeing as they have, you know, faced these quarterbacks for the first time,
right?
How much more concerned should we be?
Well, you know, in the case of Miami, when you're up as much as they were, and I'm not defending the fact that they gave up three touchdowns in the fourth quarter. When you're up as much as you are, there's a little bit of that cushion. You don't want to get complacent because, you know, hey, that Houston-Tennessee game, there was a massive comeback. You don't want to get complacent, but you know, if it was 21-7 going into the fourth quarter, maybe they'd be a little more buttoned up. Defensively, but it's becoming a bit of a trend, this poor tackling. They are in the bottom quarter of the league in yards per carry against. I think they're actually 24th in the NFL. They're Patriots defense in yards per carry against. And, you know, you don't want to get into a trap where you're allowing teams to run for 5, 5.5, 6 yards per carry. It's a problem area. It's one of the few problem areas right now. But I think, you know, you wonder if they'd still be this bad if the game was closer. That's all I'm saying. And you know, there are enough veteran players on this defense who I think, you know, have played 60 minutes of football consistently week in and week out, that maybe they did look at the scoreboard and say, all right, we're ahead by quite a bit here. And if they weren't, they'd do a better job. Well, you know, it's hard to say for sure, but they gave up a lot of offense to the Dolphins. But, you know, a lot of it was late in the game. A lot of it was in the second
half. I totally
half.
And completely yeah. understand the context. I do, and I think it's that it is maybe the ultimate nitpick. However,
but they gave up some yardage and points, I mean, to the
yardage,
Cowboys too,
yeah,
and
they
rushing
did.
Yardage and some embarrassing non-tackling plays that would be safety against Marion Barber. So they've had a couple of weeks now where tackling and rushing against have been problem areas.
Well, I think that this certainly should give them at least something to work on this week of practice, and I'm sure that it's already a focus down the hallway, so to speak, here, because you know, we know that this staff is masterful at focusing some of these things to keep people motivated and keep people striving to improve.
You almost wonder if Belichick, in a way, was okay with the fact that they were doing such a poor job, because if the game ended 49-7. You know, what does he say to the team? At least now, you can tell in the locker room after the game, the defense was a little disappointed. The bottom line was they won, and they won. That's the bottom line. A little disappointed at the fact that they were letting the Patrick Cobbs and the Jesse Chapmans of the world
run like crazy,
romp into the end zone. So, you know, there's definitely, the Belichick likes to still have that, you know, those points of emphasis that he can bring in, you know, week to week, to avoid letdown games and to you know, make sure they know that, hey, we're 7-0 and we're on a record pace for points scored, margin of victory, and everything like that. But we haven't won anything yet, and we still got ways to get better.
Yeah, all you've done is you've won 7 games. That's
right.
Great. That's as many games as you played. So far you're doing well, but you haven't won anything yet.
And you know that if they win this week and they're 8-0, he'll probably say to them, "Hey, good for you. You're 8-0. You don't take wins for granted, and that's something to be proud of." But boy, we haven't won anything yet, and the Colts can't be happy that everyone's talking about the Patriots. They're
right.
Going to be out to get us.
That's right.
We're 8-0. We haven't won anything yet. That's what he's going
to
tell them.
And if you get to the Colts game and you lose that, then where are you going to be?
Well, then
you have no reason to, you know, to be thinking any other way.
Right.
So
right.
I mean, that's, you know, it's just another part of the, you know, putting the carrot on the stick and putting it in front of the, you know, the team, and, you know, trying to motivate.
There were plenty of Division I college football teams who would have beaten the snot out of the Dolphins.
I can think of a couple anyway.
There are a few. The Dolphins are a laughing stock, and that's one of two teams representing the NFL in London this week.
That's, you know, that's
Ouch.
A little scary, by the way.
Ouch.
I mean, I realize the NFL is doing this to, you know, continue to promote, and you know, because they did away with NFL Europe and And I think it's fine, especially if the teams want to give up the home game. And believe this was Miami's home game, was it not?
It is, yeah. Yep.
So they technically gave up a home game, which is probably good for their fans.
They well,
have to see this, you know.
Well, the plan. Seriously, that's a good point. The plan is ultimately that over a, I don't know if it's a 16-year or 32-year cycle, and we're talking really broad picture here.
But
every team loses a home game.
Game.
So, but hey, there's probably some NFL owners out there who will not be owning the team for 16 or 32 years, and they'll either be victimized or won't be. But that's the plan: is every year they have one or two games abroad, and it'll all balance out in the end. And I guess the Dolphins are just the guinea pigs, and they lose the first.
When is our turn?
Well,
when do we go? Are we going to China, by the way, or is that dead?
Well, I'll tell you, I think having a preseason game in China in 2 years is not dead. Whether it's the Patriots is still up in the air.
No disrespect to the Orientals.
Yeah, whatever team Parcells is coaching that year, we'll be going.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
I'd heard that after the 2008 Olympics that it was still.
Well, that was the thing. The preseason game a couple months ago would have been on the 1 year to the date, 1 year to the day before the Olympics began. They're not going to try to do it in 08 when the Olympics are there. I think in 09, I believe it's still a preseason game.
And they would do it still with the facilities and everything up.
Exactly. And it would be, I don't think you could have a game in China during the regular season. I believe it's still a preseason situation.
Right.
And whether or not the Patriots are going to be involved, I don't think that's finalized.
Travel would be too much to overcome.
Oof.
I wonder, though, even about travel. I mean, it's good that they're taking East Coast teams to go to London. So I like that. Now, where else would they go? Would they do a regular season game maybe down in Mexico City where the Cowboys?
Yeah, well, that's
Cowboys
where they
drew over 100,000 there a few years ago when they went and played. Right?
They did have a game. Was it Dallas, Arizona?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was Dallas.
I feel like that
wasn't regular season though.
They did play a regular season.
Did they?
You know what it was? Arizona, San Fran. I think it was definitely
what it was.
They did one. Now Mexico for Arizona and San Francisco. I mean, San Francisco to go to Mexico City. I mean, that's shorter than probably some. It's obviously clearly Arizona as well. Shorter.
You know I don't speak Spanish.
Shorter than some regular season games they could go to elsewhere in the country.
Yeah.
It's a little different story when you're talking about London. Now, New York to go to London is like New York going to, you know, Seattle or San Diego probably. Now, what if the Broncos or the Chargers were involved in the game?
What other sites are they potentially talking about? Do we really know?
No, I did read somewhere that a game in Germany next year is likely, and Kansas City.
Well, six of the seven or seven of the eight teams in NFL Europe were based in Germany.
The former NFL, yeah. Yeah, so yeah. Germany clearly, I guess they figure there's a market there.
Has a passion
there.
For NFL football.
Right. Now, where else? I mean, you got to be careful here because you can't. I mean, the Giants and Dolphins both have their bye week next week. And I'm sure that's part of the plan for every game they have abroad.
Make this trip and then have your bye week
exactly.
After you take a trip.
That's only fair, and that makes sense. But depending on how far and wide they go, I mean that's a tough. It's tough to ask an NFL team to do that. And you know, it's having the bye week helps, but the bye week is almost taken consumed totally by readjusting to the time zone and all that, as opposed to pure football rest, you know what I mean? So we'll see. I'm not sure what other sites I think it's one of the topics of the current NFL owners meetings, where they have already announced that they're tweaking the draft. I'm sure you saw that.
Yes, that's the story that we haven't really had a chance to get to today. But
did you know, by the way, that as of now the Patriots have a top 11 draft pick?
Top 11?
San Fran is
San
one of the.
San Francisco is
starting
to take a little
a
bit of a nosedive.
Took a quick look today. San Fran has two wins, and there are 11 teams with two or fewer wins. So as of now, Patriots
fans. That's a top
11
pick.
The 49ers would be in the top 11. FYI.
So keep rooting for those Niners to go down
keep,
the tube.
Keep and rooting then, for Trent Dilfer to be the quarterback, I guess.
Yeah.
And for Frank Gore to be unproductive.
The story on the draft today, for those that may not have seen it or gone to ESPN to look at it, the first day is going to be two rounds instead of three. They're trying to shorten things. And each selection is going to be shortened in the first round to 10 minutes per pick rather than 15 minutes because of the over 6 hours and what was it, 6 hours and 8 minutes?
Yeah.
I think it was the first round was this
about
last
that,
April.
Yeah. So in other words, it was after 6 o'clock, probably about 6:15, 6:30 on Saturday, and they still had two more rounds to do
go.
That day.
Right. So the
and then the second round.
The time per pick in the first round will be cut from 15 minutes to 10 minutes. The second round is going to be shortened from 10 minutes to 7 minutes per selection.
Right, and that's all they'll do on the first day, starting at 3 o'clock Eastern, I think.
Yeah,
and
start at 3 o'clock Eastern time on a Sunday, two rounds,
right.
And then you'll have rounds 3 through 7 on
Sunday.
And you'll still only have 5 minutes between picks.
But it's less than five. I think it's down to two or three once you get to the fifth, sixth, seventh rounds. I'm not sure exactly what it is. But basically, day one, there will be one fewer round.
The time between picks will stay at
five minutes.
Oh, is
that what it is?
The time between picks will stay at five minutes for the last five rounds.
Oh, is that what it is? My
yep.
bad. But either way, the first day, the first day will start a little later. More of it will be in prime time. First of all,
it'll start at 3 p.m. So what that means is it'll probably finish up right before prime time starts. That's the idea.
It'll finish to probably go about 4 hours.
Yeah,
you'd say
about
okay.
4 hours.
So late afternoon into the evening, and then the entire day will end probably more like 9 or 10, or probably more like 10 o'clock instead of 11, 11:30 as it had been. So
day two of the draft will start at 10 a.m. instead of 11.
Okay.
So that's how they're going to make up for it because of the extra round. So day one is only two rounds now instead of three.
It's certainly, as long as every team is in the same boat as far as how much time they have, I think it makes sense to do it this way. It's better from a fan perspective. I mean, I shouldn't say necessarily it's better, but to have it move along quicker, definitely helps. And, ESPN always finds a way to fill that amount of time. But this will move things along quicker, and you know, as much time to wait. If your team is drafting 30th in the first round, it's a couple hours less that you have to wait.
It'll also help. True because you'll be starting later in the day.
Right.
We should also mention that the Monday night game next week may be moving up the kickoff time. NFL announced today that because if there's a World Series game, a game five between the Sox and the Rockies next week, that they're talking about moving the game up. It's in Denver next week.
Now, I take it
Green Bay at Denver.
Now, the reason for that must be that they want the football game. They want the football game to end to be guaranteed to end before the baseball game ends. Is it because they're worried, I assume, that Denver viewers, if the World Series game is ending around the same time as the football game, they're watching World Series. This way they might be able to watch both.
Well, now
let me start by congratulating the Red Sox on winning the American League.
Yes, he did. He did do that.
On the same
the game is at Denver. They said that the Monday night game is going to start at 6 p.m.
Oh, 6 p.m.?
6 p.m. Denver time.
Oh, okay, which is...
Kickoff would be about 10 minutes, it says
which
here.
Is 8 p.m. Eastern time.
Normally the game would begin at 6:30 Mountain time.
Right. So it's not a dramatic change here.
No.
We're talking a half an hour. Now, if that starts
But game
at
five
six,
of the World Series is slated, if there is
right.
a game five, to be in Denver.
Exactly. Probably about 8:30, right?
Yeah, roughly.
So, I mean, they would have been starting
but,
exactly
but my
the
guess
same
is,
time.
But first of all, they'd be playing down the street from each other.
Right.
I don't know how that's going to happen. I mean, they haven't set a starting time for game five of the World Series. First of all, we don't know if we're going to get there. But even if we do... I mean, if Monday Night Football is going to play that night, wouldn't it stand a reason that baseball would put the game on maybe like afternoon?
Baseball?
Yeah.
There's no way baseball is having an afternoon World Series.
Well, then they're going to have two competing games against
but I don't
each other
think,
in the same,
I think,
in the
I think
same
base,
city?
Baseball is probably thinking, hey, we're staying where we are. Let football change theirs. We're the bigger deal that day. I think baseball will not change. Nor should they. They're probably thinking we're the World Series.
If you're looking at an 8 o'clock start,
yeah.
Okay.
Now are you
8 o'clock Eastern time?
Right.
Or actually 8:20 is when they've been throwing the first pitch. Then you're talking about 6:20 Denver time.
Right.
And that's going to go right smack dab straight up against Monday Night Football.
Right. That's why I'm a little confused by the tweaking the Monday Night game by only a half an hour. I would have figured they either make that change that by an hour or two.
I don't know.
I don't see baseball changing. Baseball is notorious, aren't they, for all these late baseball games? They're not changing because of football.
But they are not going to move the game out of prime time on the East Coast. It's just not going to happen.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
That's where the major advertiser dollars are.
You're talking baseball right now.
Baseball.
Baseball's not changing.
No.
Baseball's
no
not
way.
Changing. So I think baseball's thinking, hey, we're staying where we are. If football wants to change, go right ahead.
Well, that's why this Monday night move doesn't make any more sense
right.
to me either.
Right.
Makes no sense. Why would they move it up 30 minutes?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Because
you're going right smack dab up against the baseball game is what you're doing by
the
doing
that. The only thing
both
I can
games
think,
are going to kick off at or both start at 6 o'clock Mountain Time.
The only thing I can think is that football thinks that half-hour change will allow more people to watch all of or most of the football game and still be able to watch the last two or three innings of baseball.
I don't see how that happens. I don't see how that happens.
It was my understanding that there would be no math.
Yeah, we've already dealt with too much math today. I will say this. It would be a hell of a day to be a sports fan in Denver.
Yeah. Not
hell
bad,
of a
huh?
day.
Not bad.
Not a bad day.
Not after both teams lose.
Well, that's also true.
And maybe the Nuggets open that day.
Both teams could go down. That's true.
Maybe the Nuggets open that day. I think, you know, maybe the Avs are playing that day. I did see the Colorado Rapids did not make the playoffs, unfortunately. So they won't be competing with soccer.
Andy in Vermont says, all right, John, you're right. Don't overlook the Redskins. And did you know that the 1950 Rams hold the all-time scoring record at 38.8 points per game? And not the Vikings, like everyone has reported.
And the Patriots are slightly ahead of that right
well,
now.
Well, the Rams' record in 1950 is points per game. The Vikings is total points scored.
And when you have different number of games.
Different
over
number of games,
season, right.
Different numbers.
Well, the points per game is a little more.
Those are two different records.
Right. Points per game is, you know, whether it's 14 or 16, have that kind of points per game average is pretty impressive. I think that's the better one to look at. And the Patriots right now are 39 point something.
Yeah.
I believe.
Just under 39.9. Yeah, they're 39.9. They're 1 point under 40 points per game.
Which is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're going through one game, two games, three games, okay, there's some flukes. Seven games in.
Yeah.
Seven games in. That's...
It's pretty amazing.
It is pretty... And you know, the Brady's totals, the pace that he's on, you know, he's one touchdown pass shy of his own career high for a season. So most likely, he sets a new career high for touchdown passes in a season, week 8. That's pretty extraordinary. But his pace, I mean, he's obviously on pace to shatter Peyton Manning's touchdown record. If he keeps up the completion percentage mark, he'll be shattering that record. Maybe the one that's most intriguing to look at that doesn't get the attention because of how many touchdowns he has is he's on pace to throw fewer than 5 interceptions all year. It's, you know, you can't throw a fraction of an interception, but he's on pace for like 4.6 interceptions. Now, to go a 16-game season and barely throw 5 interceptions is a pretty impressive number, and I bet Brady...
That's remarkable.
I bet Brady is more impressed by that, or if you get him at a truthful moment, he'd be more proud of that than the touchdowns.
Especially how he's winging it downfield.
Right, yeah. Right. Now,
you're throwing it up for grabs in double coverage, and you're expecting Randy Moss to come down with the ball, and it's not getting picked off.
And to Brady's credit, you know, when he's asked about, you know, can you believe how many touchdown passes you have and the pace you're on, he said on Sunday night, how can I take credit for these? I'm throwing it up, and that guy's catching it. I'm throwing a 5-yard pass to Dante Stallworth, and he just spins Cameron Worrell like he's a, you know, I mean,
like a
he's
top.
Like a top, and gets, how can I be taking credit for these? I mean, at least Brady understands, you know, it's not all Tom Brady, but much, you know, in the same manner, you know, interceptions are not always all him. So it's, there's some other players and factors involved here, but can you imagine going the whole season and throwing 5?
No, that's,
interceptions.
That would be more remarkable than
and
the
you know what?
Right.
I didn't look specifically at this number, but I don't know if he's on pace to be sacked more than a dozen times either. He's only been sacked. Now, he was sacked. Was it 2 or 3 against Dallas?
2.
He might have 6 or 7 right now.
He was sacked.
I want to say he was only sacked 2 or 3
times. 6 times in 6 games. So
okay.
1 more. So 7 in 7 games.
I knew he had only 2 or 3 going into the Dallas game. So
right?
Yeah,
7 and 7.
Right. So he's on pace for to be sacked about 15 times, less than 1 a game. I mean, that's
who needs Russell Baxter.
I know. No
yeah.
kidding.
Seriously, just bring me on. just call on me.
If you showed up on time, we would.
Well, you know, certain factors.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Yeah, you know.
William in Hattiesburg, Mississippi says, what a great year to be a Patriot fan. The Spygate scandal served to tighten the bond of true Pat fans. We love our coach and our players and support them until the end. I believe we have something to prove against teams every week. I believe the Pats haven't beaten the Redskins since like 1972. Is that right?
Oh, you know, I don't know.
I believe that could be a motivating factor.
Well, they don't play them. All that, you know, they don't always play them. The last time we played them was 0-3, so we both get up from our microphone at the same time. That's not good on radio, is it?
No, doesn't make for great radio.
No, but, you know, with the current schedule, the way the current NFL schedule goes, you play a team in the opposite conference every 4 years.
Right.
So I'm sure since 1972 they've only played them, 6 or 8 times.
All right, well, the Patriots all time against Washington are 1-6. They've only played them seven times
total.
And the first meeting was 1972.
So the last time they beat them was the first time they
played
them.
It was the first time they ever played them.
Yeah.
And the last time they played was 0-3, and that's obviously...
Right, it's a small sample. You know, a couple weeks ago going into the Dallas game...
That was That was. Wasn't it Steve Spurrier's, wasn't it like his last win or something as an NFL coach?
It was also the last Patriots loss before their NFL,
record win streak.
So you think Belichick was a little embarrassed to lose to Steve Spurrier? Maybe. He said, you know, we're not losing anyone else ever again.
Been motivated ever since. Yeah, so 72 is correct then, William. I believe that could be a motivating factor. I believe we stay sharp and finish this week 8-0. I'd like you guys to explain to me why we are being criticized for running up the score. Do the Miami Dolphins not pay their players millions to stop us? Do their coaches receive a salary to come up with a game plan to stop us?
Lucky.
Also, I believe we will receive a top 5 draft pick via San Francisco. What a great end considering the sanctions from Spygate. Who would you think we might pick? Well, we won't get to that just yet. But how about let's start with the why are we being criticized for running up the score?
It's a non-story. The Miami Dolphins, I've seen several quotes, and Zach Thomas, I was in the locker room, I was in the Dolphins locker room and heard Zach Thomas say this. He was asked about, you know, the two-minute offense at the end of the first half. He was asked about, you know, Brady coming back in the fourth quarter. He wasn't offended by that at all. All he said was, we've got to stop someone before we worry about are they running up the score. The reason it's a non-story, now the Cowboys had some choice words, I think, with the Kyle Echol touchdown with 19 seconds left. The Dolphins,
they called time.
Right.
How many more times do we have to explain that?
These are non. But all,
had they not called time, the clock would have run out.
Right. All I'm saying is the Cowboys chose to make some comments. The Dolphins, every quote I've seen, they have no problems with what the Patriots do. It's two teams trying to win a game. If anything, the Dolphins and other teams should look at it as a sign of respect. The Patriots thinking that, hey, this NFL team that we're playing against, they have the ability to come back just like we had the ability to come up with this many points in the first place.
Right.
I think they should take it as a sign of respect. Zach Thomas had no problem with it. It's two NFL teams trying to win a game, and you're going to do what you got to do to win the game. It's a non-story. Any criticism, at least in this instance, I don't think it's coming from the Dolphins. The Dolphins understand, I think, that they stink, and they've got to figure out how to stop teams before they worry about whether or not they're running up the score.
I'll buy that.
Yeah.
As far as the top 5 draft pick via San Francisco, you've already suggested already right now it's a top 11.
Well, yeah, that wasn't speculation on how well or poorly the 49ers are going to do the rest of the way. But
if the draft were tomorrow, that's what it would be.
When I saw the news about the draft changing, I said to myself, I know the Niners are struggling. Let's just see how bad they are. And they're 2-4, 2-5. They had their bye. They're 2-4, and there are 11 teams who have 0, 1, or 2 wins, which would mean that they'd be top 11. No worse than 11th. And the Niners are trending downward right now. Trent Dilfer, as long as he's the starting quarterback, he's done nothing for them. Frank Gore has been unproductive. That team is not in good shape right now, and there isn't much reason. I'm not sure exactly what their schedule is. There isn't much reason to think that they're going to drastically or dramatically improve this year. So where it ends up being, I don't know. Would it be a stunner if it's top 5, top 7? No, I don't think so. There are some bad teams out there. I don't think that the Niners are going to get to the level of Miami, St. Louis. I think those two teams might be able to lock in 1 and 2 in some order. But the Niners, that's something to look for if you're a Patriots fan down the stretch, is check out those 49ers scores.
Absolutely.
And, any excitement that was lost by the punishment with the Spygate scandal can be reversed by the Niners doing poorly.
Who would you think we might pick?
Well, I've been scouting these, you know. Well, I think quarterback, obviously, is a position of need. They haven't drafted a defensive lineman recently.
We're not laughing at you, William. We're just kind of, you know, that's just, you know, it's sort of a running joke around here. Sometimes we don't even know who they're going to pick the day that they pick the person.
They'll
trade
the pick.
That's the way it works.
They might trade
the pick down for two ones next year.
They'll do something. Yeah, I don't think they want top 10 picks.
No.
They don't want to pay the guy.
No.
So, hey,
that's actually a good point, by the way.
I think that's another situation that I bet the NFL looks at going forward, and it might be something that they can't really do much about until the next CBA is due. It's staggering how much first round, not just first round, but top 5, top 10 picks are getting paid before they've proven anything.
Right.
And I don't think that the Patriots aren't too interested in giving a top 10, say, cornerback who's done nothing in the NFL, you know, 20-whatever million dollar signing bonus. They're not interested in that.
Right.
So,
All right. Craig in South Carolina sends another note. He says, it's obvious, talking about the Greg Easterbrook column, it's obvious this guy is in need of a hug. He says, I think it would be a good idea to have Vrabel and Light bring the guy a fruit basket. Okay. Easterbrook is insignificant and moronic. I would have thought that a guy who uses the word sybarite to describe Tom Brady would have been able to find a thesaurus so he wouldn't have to use the word creepy a dozen times. To further prove what a moron this guy is, his number two stat of the week points out that the Titans had to kick a last-second field goal to pull out a game in which they led 32-7. He's moaning and groaning about us running up the score in one breath and then highlights the fact that teams are capable of coming back and blowing large leads. Near the end of his idiotic column, he suggests that Belichick is somehow responsible for the point spread being only 16.5, and that the Pats had a reason to run up the score. You sure Easterbrook is not Felger's pen name?
Wow, that's hard.
Craig, that's actually pretty good. I like that one.
That's interesting. Well, you know, that point about the Houston-Tennessee game, which was going on at the same time as Patriots-Dolphins, that's all Belichick needs to point to. Hey, look, you know, two NFL teams are playing each other. One of them has a 30-whatever point lead, yeah, and the other one comes back. Now, granted, the gap between the Patriots and Dolphins is much wider than that, the gap between the Titans and the Texans. But the perspective of the Patriots is, if we're an NFL team and we can score 42 points and a half, then the team we're playing against, also an NFL team, has the capability of scoring 42 points as well. Belichick had some gems in his post-game press conference, John. I'm not sure if you were watching it or saw it, but he...
Yeah, I was at the game.
There you go. Gary was watching it and saw it. And I don't know if you have the follow-up laughter from the room, but it was a great line. Yes, he does. And I don't know if you... I mean, the flow of that press conference, there was an initial question about... Brady coming back into the game there after Castle threw that interception.
Right.
And, you know, Belichick gives his, you know, we're just trying to win a game. We're just trying to win a game. A few other follow-ups that weren't acceptable. And one reporter said, well, but the score was 42-21. And Belichick said,
yeah, I was at the game.
Belichick, well, right.
Screw him.
Well, what he initially said was, yeah, it was 42-21, and one more interception return for a touchdown makes it a 14-point game in the fourth quarter, in the middle of the fourth quarter. I was at the game. I mean, he, once you start getting into that 14-point range, you start talking about onside kicks and flukes here and there. You know, I mean, they're just trying to win the game. Now, look, was there much of a chance that the Dolphins were going to come back? No. You can't objectively think so. Is it possible? Have stranger things happened? Yeah. Yeah, strange things. You know,
sure.
It's a non-story, though, because to me, the Dolphins had no problem with it. That's enough said. The Dolphins didn't think it was running up the score. The Dolphins understood that it's two NFL teams trying to win a game. That's all that matters. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. So I hope we can put that storyline to rest. I really do.
No, it'll come back.
When
they tar and feather Buffalo or Miami or the Jets at some point in time during this latter part of the year, which they've all got to play at least one more time,
you know
it will come back.
Oh, the Jets, that will be merciless.
Oh, I guarantee you that'll be merciless. If you want the Patriots to hang half a hundred on somebody this year, I think that would be the game that you'd look for.
Yeah, if they score 42 points in the first half of that game, I guarantee you they're scoring more than seven in the second half.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Guaranteed.
Absolutely.
Matt Castle might not dress for that game. It's going to be all Brady.
They may score 60 in that game.
Yeah. Yeah. Get the record books out, fans.
You might want to think about putting a little something on the over.
Yeah. Get the record books out for points in a game, yards in a game, margin of victory.
That will be tough.
The whole deal.
That'll be tough.
The whole deal.
All right, B-Lo, what's on Patriots today?
You know, we're talking a little bit about Willie Andrews and his play there. Now, in some circumstances, when you have a kickoff return for a touchdown, it completely demoralizes a team and all that. Especially when it's on the road. Well, in this case, there were more Patriots fans than Dolphins fans, so I'm not sure how important that was. Nonetheless, it was a great play. And also talking a little bit about the some of the defensive deficiencies, tackling and all that. And we got Paul Perillo in studio as well.
How about that? By the way, what time do you guys post that on the website?
You know, the beauty of the website is it isn't a specific. It's got to be up at 5 o'clock, but generally in the 6 o'clock range. So you go home, you have some dinner, you relax, you turn on the internet, and there it is. So
usually by around 6 p.m.
Usually in that early afternoon.
This is pretty much the worst video ever made.
The daily worst video ever made is put up around 6 o'clock.
Not
boy, there are some other people down
That's
there.
That's the new name, right?
What's that?
That's the new name?
Worst video ever
this
made?
This is pretty much the worst video ever made.
Welcome to today's edition of the worst video ever made.
Actually, that'd be catchy.
That's pretty catchy, huh?
Probably get more people to watch it.
Could we make some t-shirts out of that?
You should.
Oh, you there should. We go.
See, a little marketing item.
Might have to work on that.
As long as you put Christina's picture on it, everything will be all right.
And my picture, too, right? Oh, we won't sell too many.
No.
Good point. Good point.
People confuse you with Jared from Subway.
They do. They do. Hopefully the after Jared than the before.
Too bad it's not. Yeah. Has anybody ever seen the before Jared, by the way?
Yeah.
Has anybody ever seen his picture?
Sure.
How big he really was?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. Was that in some of like, the early commercials?
Well, no. I think the commercials have only been the after, but they show still photos. They show the, you know, like they do on the Mike Golick show, you know, those Mike Golick NutraSweet or what NutriSystem ads or whatever.
Yeah.
Hey!
I like that. Good. All right, B-Lo. Thanks,
buddy. All right, thank you.
Say hello to Christina.
I will do that right now.
All right, good deal. Same patch time, same patch channel tomorrow. We'll have the conference calls. Joe Gibbs and a Redskins player to be named. We'll probably get inside the Patriots locker room. Some other special surprises, I'm certain. Inside the playbook for you on Wednesday.
Learning from each other while we do our thing.
Yeah, I was at the game.